But I think we're in this cancel culture where we want to cancel everything that we don't approve of people. And these people didn't choose to be our role models. They were artists. If it was 30, 40 years ago, we wouldn't know a lot of the moves and the shit that they were saying. We just would know the music. And so I think we have to take that with a grain of salt, you know, in how we evaluate and assess these artists in our culture now.
What's going down? It's your boy T. Cole, and this is the Outnumbered Effect. First show of 2020 in the studio, and I have a special guest today. A&R, Marketing and Public Relations. Key, how you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. I didn't know I was the first show of the year. Woo woo.
Yes, first recorded show of the year. But first time in the studio this year. Last time we did a show was our New Year's show. Mm-hmm. Just dropped that the other day. So hope everybody's appreciating that top five New Year's show. But very excited to have you here today.
Thank you.
Beautiful Saturday. And let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Man, so you know OE loves music. So I figured having you here today would be a great experience getting you here and kind of talking to you about the industry and just learning a bit more about it and what your job really entails.
Cool. Ask away.
Nice. So can you tell everybody listening, like, what exactly you do in the industry it's all related for you in the industry as far as, like, public relations, marketing, and A&R?
Yeah. Okay. I pretty much have my hands in a little bit of everything. I don't really know how else to explain it. A&R, PR, marketing, strategic branding and development, artist development, everything that entails that. I think just in doing that, my hands are, again, in everything in a way to where it all kind of makes sense. I think when you're doing public relations, that's essentially how a client relates to the public. That's their public image. Marketing is the product or service that, a client is pushing. But I think all of that goes back into the image of who that person is and what they are to their audience. And so in doing that, I work with a lot of nonprofits, a lot of just marketing and branding companies, a lot of labels, anything like that to kind of make sure that I'm positioning my client, whomever that client or organization is, in the best light to have people talking about it all the time.
Yeah, that's the thing, man, especially with marketing. If you're trying to market somebody the right way, people should be talking about them.
Absolutely, always.
You know, it's interesting you saying that you talk about the whole, the public relations aspect and, you know, trying to help with someone's image, I imagine.
Right.
Has there ever been like someone's image where it was just unfixable for you?
It's so funny that you mentioned that. Absolutely. I don't think any situation is unfixable, but I think if it comes down to a situation where it's my integrity or my reputation on the line in order to save a client, then it's not that serious for me. And that was a situation with the business that I was involved with before. I chose to just step away, leave all the money on the table, and just, because it wasn't really any fixing.
Yeah, if you can't fix it and it's going to mess up your integrity too, like there's no need to drag your name and your reputation.
Absolutely.
In the mud.
I'll always choose me.
Yeah. Facts, man. Facts. You are everybody else.
Yep.
You know, as long as you're not hurting anybody.
Absolutely.
In the process. But as far as, like, you know, I imagine that if a situation was unfixable or it potentially couldn't be unfixable, some of it probably has to do with that artist, too. Like, they're going to have to meet you halfway to do the work.
Absolutely. And again, like I said, this actually wasn't an artist. This situation was with a business. So I work with, I do PR for nonprofits, for businesses, for artists, for the government, for council people and stuff like that, anything like that. And I was actually joking with one of my clients recently. I was like, I'm basically like an Olivia Pope, but not for the White House, for everybody else.
That's funny. Scandal part two.
Absolutely, always.
That's awesome. So you mentioned, you know, PR, marketing some PR, trying to fix someone's image. Has there been anybody that was just, you tried to market and the public just wasn't really just feeling their work, or you kind of just felt like...
No, not necessarily. I don't think that's ever really been the case, just because I kind of audit and assess whatever client I'm going to work with.
Okay.
So I will already go into it with an exploratory or consultation with them where I'm talking to them about things that they're interested in, things that they, what products or services that they're trying to promote. And then I kind of take that away, go back, and then kind of regroup and say, okay, well, what are the angles that we can work? What are the things to position this person in front of the audiences and the demographics that they want to be in? So it's always a strategy behind it with me. So I've never really had it to where it's not worked. I have had situations where I'm coming up with a marketing strategy or a PR strategy, and they're paying me to do that, and then they will go off the limb and just do something on their own.
Hey, you still got that check, though.
Yeah, but I think also just it's not just about the check. If I'm going to, you know, if you are my client or, you know, I at least like to go back and make sure that it works. It's not just to walk away with the check.
Definitely.
But I think sometimes they can shoot themselves in the foot if we say this is a strategy and then you deviate from that and then you don't get the desired results that you wanted, you know.
Yeah, I mean, hey, at the end of the day, you did your part to line them up to be successful. And if they didn't want to follow that path.
Right.
That's on them.
Right.
That's on them.
Yeah, and that's why I always say I don't necessarily marry a client or an artist. And I realized the one time I did was when it, you know, came back to bite me. But, yeah, I don't usually not attach myself to one person, but I like to, again, keep my hands in everything. Because when you just focus solely on one client, I think you get pigeonholed. And it's hard to kind of, people then look at you as, oh, you're basically vouching for this client, so everything you say is going to be biased, essentially. And so when you have and represent so many people, they don't necessarily know your motives or any, you know, in the situation because you work with so many people. And so it's easier to just kind of, you know, move in silence, so to speak.
That's dope. I like the way you worded that. So what really made you want to just get into this line of work? Did you always know you wanted to do this or?
No. Growing up, I wanted to be a lawyer. I knew, and honestly, I take that back. Growing up, I knew I wanted to be paid. I knew I wanted to be paid. And I remember just, you know, being a girl, of course, and having other friends and they're planning their weddings and stuff. And I'm like, nah, I just want to be paid. Like, I just want to travel the world. I want to meet all these people. I want to, you know, eat expensive food. I want to smoke expensive weed. Like, I'm that person when everyone else is like, oh, this is my wedding dress and stuff like that. And then I was in debate. And I, you know, I can debate. I can sit and talk all day, you know, about anything. And so I was like, okay, maybe, you know, law is the way to go. And then, you know, went to college, went to Baylor, and it was hella expensive. And I was like, maybe not. If it's already $40,000 to go a semester, and then, you know, law school, the ones I was looking at was like anywhere from 30 grand a year. She's like, you know, maybe not. I like sports. So then I said, okay, well, maybe I could do like marketing for like sports related brands and stuff like that. And then music had always just been a hobby. I knew I was never good at music, but I always had an ear for it. I could point out a sample from anywhere. I listened to anybody. And I think just kind of that hobby, people would come to me for my music opinion on things. And it started in college when we were doing a project. We had a business class and we had to make a dollar, like profit some money, basically from a project by the end of the year. And we were going to do a concert. And that was when we chose to do a Drake concert. And the argument was at the time, I'm aging myself, but this is like, this is like 09, 2010. And we basically talking about either having bringing Lupe Fiasco down or Drake. And everyone wanted Lupe because he had just dropped Kick Push. And I'm like, no, Drake. But I had seen Drake recently in Virginia at a free concert, and he was passing out CDs.
So this 09 was So Far So Gone, huh?
Actually, So Far So Gone hadn't even dropped yet. And so when we were doing it, was the semester before. So I think So Far Gone maybe dropped in like a February or something.
It did.
And we, before that, I had already been listening to him because he did like Heartbreak Drake or he had some mixes. But So Far Gone was like before, it was after. So we then do this concert and it's amazing. And after that, I just kind of had the bug. We then moved and we did a Trey Songz concert. And at this time, I'm still in college. And then when I got out, I moved back to Austin and I wanted to work for South By. And I got a call from Live Mixtapes and we did, I was like a project manager for them and did the 2012 Live Mixtape Showcase with Mac Miller, Kevin Gates, Yo Gotti, Slick Pulla, and it was some other artists. Oh, it was A$AP Rocky back before he even really had A$AP Mob. Yeah, and then at that point, I just kind of had the bug of, like, just knowing how to put events together, knowing how to get artists to work together, understanding how everyone was watching the hip-hop culture and how it was infiltrating so many other markets, you know, without people even realizing it. And I was just like, this is where I need to be for the culture.
That's awesome. I love the way you described all that. You know, music is just so important.
Absolutely.
It's definitely important to me. Like, I don't play in any instruments or anything, mm-hmm. but I take it with me every day in my life. You know, I wake up listening to music throughout the day, listening to music before I go to bed. I don't know. I just started listening to music at a young age, mm-hmm. just what my parents had in the house. And music just makes me happy. There's just so many emotions with music.
Absolutely. It can put you in any type of mood. And mm-hmm. I think for me, like, that was when I realized how important it was. And college was just hard for me, especially my senior year, because I was just so ready to get out. And that was when I started doing like a theme song for my year. And I would just choose a song for the year, and that would be like my motivational song or just whatever. And my senior year was 2011, and I chose Damn It Feels Good to Be a Gangster. And I literally listened to that shit every day walking to class. And it just put me in a mood of, like, I gotta finish, like. And I don't know why I can't even sing the verse, because, I mean, I don't know if we allow cursing or anything.
You're good.
It's horrible.
You're good.
But it was so real. I was just like, Scarface was just on some real ass shit on Damn It Feels Good to Be a Gangster.
Hey, speaking of Scarface, he's about to be out here next month.
What?
At Antone's. I need to buy my ticket.
Right.
Yeah, he's going to be out here next month, man.
Look at him. And it's crazy just to see Scarface going from music to now in the political arena. Like, people, you know, they be sleep on
bridging
music.
Bridging the gap between politics
exactly.
and hip-hop,
they
man.
Be sleep on hip-hop. And I think Scarface is just an underrated legend in the hip-hop culture.
Definitely.
Because I think he was one of the first ones to really start talking about, like, mental health and his issues with mental health. And I think with that, like, you know, it's just he kind of broke down a lot of doors in talking about mental health issues in the Black community to talking about getting, you know, involved in politics. And this is from an artist that probably sold drugs, because, you know, most of them do. So they say.
Ghetto
so,
boys.
I mean, exactly. Like, to see just that transition, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you look at some of these artists from back in the day. Like, you know, I'm in my 30s, so you see, like, the Jay-Z's and the Diddy's of the world and seeing everything that they're doing, you know, taking it from when their careers just started and just not even really being in the music as much, but really just being businessmen.
Exactly.
Like, you don't have to dribble a ball or rap. Like, they're doing something
exactly.
else that has nothing to do with music for a lot of things, you
exactly.
know?
And I don't think people understand the importance of how PR kind of navigates that. Because if you think of
the scandals from them back in the day, the
exactly.
different things that were happening.
If you think of just Jay-Z and Money Ain't a Thing, like, how it was just so carefree. We got money. We blowing millions, you know, on nothing. And then, exactly. And then they transition to, we're billionaires, we're owning teams, we're, you know, really pushing the dial on the culture and really breaking down, you know, just barriers. And
just like Diddy, man, like, I know he was real big on trying to get everybody to vote. Like,
yep.
back in the day, he was like one of the first ones in the Black community that was really just trying to push it to get the younger vote out.
Absolutely.
There.
And then when he was running marathons and stuff like that. Yeah. All that's PR, man.
Mm-hmm.
All of that. That is continuing to sell the image, continue to buy into whatever this person pushes, whatever this client or organization. That's PR, and that's Olivia Pope.
Yeah. You think Jay-Z and the whole NFL thing was PR? You think it's a bigger move that we don't know what it's going to be.
Well, it definitely was PR involved on both ends. I think the NFL needed to do something, mm-hmm. and they knew they needed to do something, and they knew that they couldn't speak or be the person or entity to do something because that's the situation that got them there in the first place. And so I think with Jay-Z, it took an image like Jay-Z to kind of shift that, because if any other artist would have tried to do what Jay-Z did, I think they would have got swallowed whole, you know. And I think even with Jay-Z, you know, he got his backlash, but I think he's so much behind the scenes that, you know, it's always a little bit more to it, to where you kind of give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't know, you know, I'm not on the inside enough to know what happened with that, what happened with Colin Kaepernick's tryout and all of that. And it was just so many parties that was just going back and forth. But I do think even for Jay-Z to get involved and to even allow them to give Colin Kaepernick another tryout, was them admitting some fault in the situation that they had done.
I feel that.
You know, because I think if Jay-Z hadn't gotten involved, I don't think anyone would have said, can we just let the man try again? You know, I don't think any of those owners would have cared that much, because that was over their heads. They didn't understand how to connect with the community. They didn't understand how to connect with their audiences. So they had to bring someone in like Jay-Z. But, I mean, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about everybody. And again, you'd never know the story. And
you never know, because we're not there.
Exactly. And when you're doing PR, you really never know the story, because I have spent so many stories to where it's like, what? Like,
you don't even remember what the truth was.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's just, it can't be that, you know. And so we know whatever that is, like, it can't be that. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Back to what we were saying about the whole, you know, music thing and the different emotions and all that. I thought to myself the other day, I'm a big R&B fan. Mm-hmm. I love R&B. And a lot of these women and a lot of these men and some of these songs that they wrote, a lot of pain. A lot of pain in some of these songs and some of these stories. I mean, all of them can't be real, but, you know, some of them had to be real to get some of the, like, I'm thinking about 90s R&B.
Yeah.
You know, those stories that you hear.
Absolutely. And, I mean, they're not that unreal.
Yeah.
It's a lot of times when you listen to the music,
it's like, damn, as you get, and that's another thing, too. Being older, you think about it, it's like, oh, shit, I could kind of relate to this
exactly.
shit now. Good and bad.
Exactly. I think recently, actually, yeah, probably, but when I was getting dressed for this, I was listening to Summer Walker, and I was just like, man, Summer Walker's album was so underrated. It was number one, but it was still underrated.
Man, honestly,
because I'm like, that is
really
real 90s R&B. Like, when you listen to, it's like, I don't necessarily think she can sing better than anybody else who's really doing R&B right now, but it was just so...
It was a solid, and then the samples that she had on there, too, were nice, and... It wasn't in my top five for the year, but I could easily put it at six, though. Six or seven.
If I'm doing R&B, then it definitely wasn't a top five R&B album.
You said
of
it
the
wasn't
year.
Or was?
No, it definitely
if it's
was.
R&B, if then just yeah, R&B, if it's just R&B, because I got Ari at one, and then I'd probably put her at two or three, because Sirs wasn't bad either, though.
Yeah, I would definitely put her at number one as far as... the R&B album, but I mean, I could be biased. I love R&B, 90s R&B.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was textbook 90s R&B. That was a 90s R&B album that everyone in there, you know, 28 plus remembers from the 90s. You know, every song, I was like, okay, this sounds like a Total song. This sounds like a 702 song. This sounds like a Usher song.
Yeah.
This sounds like 112. This sounds like
Jay-Z.
Solid. This sounds like Jodeci. Every track, it was like, it was nostalgic,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so I could definitely relate to that. Ari, that's my girl crush. So, of course, her album was amazing. But I think it was... I liked it, but I do think it was a little heady for...
First album?
Exactly. And especially for people who are trying to understand R&B. Yeah, I think for her, that was like a... To me, that was like...
I'm going to do what I want to do.
Exactly. It was a blend of almost like, to me, a Jasmine Sullivan and an Erykah Badu album, but it was seasoned. And for her to come out as that be her first album, I think it went over a lot of people's heads.
It did. I think it did.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I loved
absolutely.
It. I loved it.
I did
it.
Too.
It was great. it's just hard nowadays with music, you know, catching people's attention span, songs being shorter. Like, a lot of Summer Walker songs are short. Like, yeah. This album, she did better than she did with her last one. The songs were longer than what they were right. before. But there's a method to the madness with the way people go about their music nowadays. And, like, her songs, you know, they're shorter. You can listen to them a lot faster. It's going to get more of a replay value, too.
Right. And some of them were long. Some of them were really short. And yes. I noticed that some of my favorite ones were short. But what I also noticed is I think it goes back to just the nostalgia. I think we were talking about this a while back. Interludes. They made me think of interludes. And interludes were on every 90s album. Yeah. Rap, hip-hop.
Definitely.
So the short ones, it was just kind of like a prelude to the next thing, you know? It was that in-between, like, these are some thoughts, almost like someone just kind of, I don't know, exposing a journal writing to you.
The only thing that made me mad about the album, we talked about it, like, on one of the shows when we did, like, our review on it. She did Bryson Tiller dirty. She could have gave him a longer verse on the song. That song was so short already. He could have did a little bit more on there, man.
I have my personal opinions about Bryson Tiller. I don't know. I felt like he got enough on that because I didn't like his verse on it.
I mean, we needed to hear more.
I felt like in the little bit that she gave you, you could have did more with that. Like, the verse to me, it was like one, I remember it because I was listening to it right before I came. It was one part of his verse where he said, like, on purpose. He rhymed on purpose with on purpose. And I'm like, if you only got, like, 12 bars, come on. Like,
come with it.
You know? And it's like, Bryson, where you been? And that's my only thing with him. I'm like, Bryson Tiller, where you been, man? You can't come and give us the album that you gave us and then disappear like that. You missing like Bilal out here.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, so I think when you have those opportunities to come back, because his album was a breakout album like
the Trap Soul.
Yeah, that took everybody back to R&B. Like, that had Drake in his DMs like, nigga, give me the formula, you know?
Thanks.
And he was young at that time, like maybe 19, 20. So, I mean, I think for him, he still has time, but I'm just like, where you at, bro? Like, I'm waiting up. Drop some on fire.
Yeah. I definitely want to hear some more from him.
Absolutely.
I mean, I thought it was dope, though, when J. Cole did that on that For Your Eyes Only.
Mm-hmm.
Did that track on his beat. You
absolutely,
know?
Yeah.
That was nice how he did that.
Yeah. And I just think, I don't know. Like I said, Bryson Tiller comeback, where you at? If Summer Walker put you on her album, that was amazing. You could have brought more fire. That's all.
Hey, it's 2020. It's a new year.
New year,
so we'll hear some new stuff.
Yeah, he got a new baby. You know, he might be going through some new things. Mm. I don't know.
Maybe some new inspiration will come for his music.
And I hate that we hope artists be going through things so they drop hot shit. But, I mean, I don't like Mary J. Blige happy. I don't. Personally, I don't. Like, her albums when she happy.
You like Skinny Luther or Big Luther better?
See, now you really gonna have them after me. I'm not really a Big Luther fan.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
What?
See, I couldn't feel it. I never felt his songs like that. You know, it was just, it's maybe because he wasn't singing to me.
But speaking of artists, though, who are some artists that you work with, and who was your first artist that you worked with?
First artist that I worked with. I can't remember. And I know that's kind of messed up, but it's just because
She out there. She's working with hundreds of artists
now. I just kind of worked with them in different ways. And so it might be in just me giving you a strategy, me doing a listening session for you, me throwing a release party for you. So I don't know. I've kind of been doing that forever. So I would say, everybody. And then I don't know if I'm working with live mixtapes, working with Mac Miller and Yo Gotti and all of them counts. Like, how does that count? But I would say personally, an artist that I've worked with recently was Baby Rose.
Okay.
And she's just been amazing. And just to see from when I worked with her and to see where she's going on her own, like, is amazing. It's been, like, within a year. I was listening to SoundCloud and had some money to throw a series together in Austin and, you know, brought her down. And she's just like, oh, my God, she sounds exactly like she sounds on SoundCloud and Spotify and every. And I think at the time she was just on SoundCloud. She might not have even been on Spotify or anything like that. And she came down, and I just met her mom, her family, and her mom was just like, would you like to be a part of the management team?
No.
I'm just like, sure. And I was working, you know, remotely in Austin, and they're in Atlanta, based in Atlanta. So I was just kind of, you know, in and out and just trying to, you know, help out, help her with South By and all of that. But to see her go from no one knowing her and her not trusting herself and her not being chosen for South By to then see her do a feature with Crit that then LeBron posts on his IG story, to then see her, you know, on J. Cole's and what is it, Revenge of the Dreamers?
He has so many people on there. Like, yeah. He had people on there that I didn't even know who they were, but it jammed.
Exactly. And so to see her get that verse and then to see it go up for, you know, a Grammy, and this is within like a year, you know, and a half time, I'm just like, this is amazing. But it kind of was reassuring for me too, because I'm like, I know what I know. And in Austin, it's been so hard for me to work with a lot of different artists because I don't know if it's I'm a woman or if they don't, my name isn't buzzing like that to where I always felt like I've had to prove myself to them, you know. And then with working with this artist, I didn't have to prove anything. She just let me do the work. And, you know, I'm working with her mentors and stuff. And to see her go from literally on SoundCloud to then being featured on a billboard in Times Square, to be Apple's, like iTunes, you know, Artist of the Month, to be in Billboard, to have the number 17 song of the R&B song of the year from New York Times. I'm like, this is crazy. Like, this is amazing. So, yeah, I would say her, I probably worked a little bit more with her than I had with other artists. But yeah, I'm out here now, working with a lot of different artists. I was, did a write up recently for B-Not, out in, he's in New York, the Lab Rats out there, like a producer duo, out in Atlanta. Yeah. So pitching some different things to Rap Snacks, just different types of, you know, organizations and entities in the culture.
Out here hustling.
Gotta be.
I see you.
Yeah.
I see you.
In between, you know, my day job, so.
Got to.
Yeah.
Got to be a jack of all trades.
Always.
Episode 10, J Soul Ginger Mall, jack of all trades. Check it out. But nah, you have to be. You have to be in this day and age, and there's just too many hustles out there for anybody not to be making some type of money.
Yeah.
Like, everybody should have at least one hustle right now.
Exactly.
At least one.
It's crazy. Like I said, it's just so hard for me to work with artists in Austin to the point to where I don't even work with them like that. If they come to me, yeah, sure, you know, I'm definitely open. But I'm literally sitting at home and I get a call from New York, and this is yesterday. Hey, you know, Young LA is doing a project with Zaytoven. Can you do a write up on it? Bet. Where are you at, actually? Oh, I'm in Austin. Oh, are you? Okay, well, I'm representing This Is 50 Cent's company, and we need help with putting us out two South By shows together. Like, could you help out? Bet. Like, you know, and it just happens like that. And then I'm like, this does not happen for me in Austin. I don't know why, but I'm like, I'm literally sitting at home getting calls from Atlanta, getting calls from New York. Hey, can you put Lil Mo's bio together? Can you rework her bio? She's about to go on tour. Sure. You know, I'm reworking it in traffic on the way to work. Like, you know, just hustling. Got to do what you got to do.
I love it. I love it. So many artists putting in a whole bunch of work. I know it can be real rewarding, definitely, when you see those artists achieving those goals that they've been looking to achieve, especially with Baby Rose.
Yeah.
That's your baby right there.
Yeah.
You know?
She's so cool. She's so sweet.
You planted that seed and watched it grow.
Yeah. And I mean, I didn't even do all of the work. It was, like I said, it was an opportunity in disguise for me, just because for her mom to even extend that offer, you know, shout out to Miss Joyce, but to extend that offer. And then I'm like, okay, you know, I'm coming on the team thinking I know some shit. And then it's like, oh, well, you know, her manager's Mitch Martin, her lead manager. And I'm like, okay, Mitch Martin, of course, is the brother of Matt Martian, who is the producer in The Internet. And he was Janelle Monáe's manager of 9 years. So I'm like, oh, shit, like, these are heavy hitters. He's now, you know, the creative director at BMI. And they're asking me to be on this team. I'm like, what? And then they're like, yeah, you know. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm in and out. I'm helping her as much as I can. But he also has a full-time at BMI now, you know. And then it's like, well, we have her mentor as well. And then her mentor is Mike Brinkley, who is an exec at Roc Nation, and he's also Dej Loaf's manager. And so it's like to be able for me to get plugged into these people where I'm coming from Austin and not knowing anybody and, you know, happen to pop in Atlanta. And Mitch is like, hey, you know, go hang out with Adonis and the team at A3C. And I'm just like, wow, like these opportunities are just not, you know, in some places for me. So yeah, like Baby Rose opened those doors for me to where I'm getting those calls from Atlanta where I'm thinking I'm helping this artist because I hear her on SoundCloud and she's like, she's the talent, you know? So I think especially to be able to work with someone who gives back as much as they receive, you know, that's amazing.
That's fire. That's real fire. What are some of the challenges, you know, that you have with some of these artists at times that you see the most, that comes up the most?
Challenges. I would say money, but that's an easy answer. I think I've worked with artists with no budgets. I've worked for free. I've worked with whatever budget you could afford. So the money is not really the issue. I honestly like working with less money because it forces you to be more creative, which is why I also prefer working with more indie artists and independent artists because you can work with any budget. As long as you make that shit look like you did it on purpose, it's gold. You know, I think, but when you want a $1 million video on a $10,000 budget, then you're not going to get the desired results that you want, you know? So I would say that's one of my challenges. Another challenge is probably the lack of knowledge that some artists have about the business side of things. And so one of my mentors, shout out to Daisha. Daisha was a marketing exec at Rap Snacks for like 10 years. She still works for them, but she's in a different department in like partnerships and communication. But Daisha was just like, look, I don't work with any artist who hasn't read the book. It's like everything you need to know about the music industry or the music business. She won't work with you if you've never read the book. And she came under Deb Adney. She was Deb Adney's first like marketing intern. So when she was managing Gucci Mane, when she was managing Waka, Nicki Minaj, and French Montana, she was learning from Deb Adney. And so she's even telling me, I don't work with any artist who hasn't read this book. And not because I want you to know everything about the business industry or the business, you know, side of it, but just so that you know why I'm moving in the ways that I'm moving. And so I've noticed that with a lot of artists that they just want to do art and do the art side of it without having a business model to it. So it's sometimes a little difficult or challenging to show them how to make it a business. It's not just about the music. It's not just you creating it in a studio in your closet. It's not about that. You can make the most fire ass shit, but if people don't know about it, what are you doing? You know, and so I think that is one of my biggest challenges in them having to listen to me about certain things. Because it's like your track, I'm having to move artists from dropping albums to doing more singles. And so they want to go in and just drop album after album after album. Why? Why? You know, we are in the microwave era. People are listening to your shit in one day and, you know, digesting it, and then they're not listening to it again. And you, all this work, all this money you've put into one album now goes down the drain, you know? And so now pushing artists to go more towards singles and single release parties as opposed to album release parties and just having them understand that concept is so hard. But you read that book and that's one of the first couple of chapters because you understand that now labels are tying these artists into these long ass contracts because they understand that albums aren't selling. So they will say, oh, I'll sign a deal with you for 3 albums, but they'll constantly have you releasing singles because the singles are what's making the money. People aren't listening. That now that we have streaming services, you're not listening to the whole album. You're going and listening to the favorite songs on that album, you know? So they don't want to put all this money into your album. So they have you releasing singles, and 20 singles down the line, you've only released 1 album, you know? And so it's just...
Or none, like exactly. Jordan Lucas.
Absolutely. And that's how they get you. And so just really having to understand that them, you know, understanding the business side of it is probably the most challenging. And them understanding that your single should not just be a song. It should be a brand. Everyone is a separate brand. It should be on a t-shirt. It should be on a lighter. It should be on a hat. It should be, you know, people should be tired of hearing this song and seeing this song by the time you're moving on to your next project.
Hey, that's real. That's super real. Music just gets digested so much. And there's stuff that came out last year that I liked, but I didn't listen to it a lot.
And you forget about it.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's why it's good if you can have stuff saved so you can go back and look at it. I'm so annoyed with the way Spotify, they had an update like a few months ago and used to be able to see a lot more of what you recently listened to.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like they cut that list in half. So sometimes I'll look and I'm like, man, I felt like I was rocking with something last week that I'm not listening to this week. I wish I can remember what it is. And then sometimes it pops back up. It says, jump back in. It's like, oh, yeah.
Exactly. And it's just, I don't know, with me, I like to listen to an album maybe 2 or 3 weeks after it's come out. And I think that people feel a way about that, especially with me having to do like write-ups and, you know, just reviews of albums and stuff. I either will listen to the album before it comes out and we'll do the review, or I will wait 3-4 weeks after the album has come out to do the review. Because people now, like this social media frenzy, I don't like to feel influenced by it. And people will already, and the album has dropped 9 hours ago, and they've already done think pieces on the
album. That's crazy how, like, you know, you'll see articles, and it's like, damn, how long were they listening to it before they actually, like, wrote this?
Exactly.
And sometimes, like, you have to listen to an album, and you kind of have to let it go and come back to it. Because I can honestly say, when I first heard Summer Walker's album, I enjoyed it, but I didn't like it as much as the previous album. And now, I'm kind of on the fence, but I still enjoyed the other one more, but I do like this one a lot more than I did before. Roddy Ricch's is another one. Listened to it, thought it was okay, didn't think it was bad. Now I'm rocking out with it.
Exactly.
It jams.
I'm the same way with So Much Fun. Right now, the only thing I've been listening to is Summer Walker and So Much Fun. When So Much Fun first came out, Young Thug, I'm like,
A lot of people talk about So Much Fun. Maybe I need to go back and listen to it again.
So Much
Personally,
Fun.
Personally, I'm not a Young Thug fan.
I wasn't a Young Thug fan. I was so anti-Young Thug. I'm a Wayne head for life.
And you know, the whole background story
So I was just like, Young Thug, no. But to see him kind of evolve, I think
he... Out of the basic rappers, he's up there, the upper echelon with those basic
Absolutely.
Rappers.
Absolutely. And, and not even that, I'm so proud of these artists for owning shit now. Because it's like he then went from, it seemed like he was Birdman's pet, essentially, to then see him starting his YSL label and then having, who is it on the label? I think it's Gunna on the label that he signed on the label. So just to see that these artists are now, like, curating the culture and curating the community to see, you know, I was so anti-Young Thug, especially when he had the comment about what he said with, was it Michael... Was his last name Michael Brown who got shot in Ferguson?
It's so many. It's so hard to remember which one.
Yeah, but you know, it started like the Ferguson riots and all of that. But yeah, when they asked him about it and he was just like, that ain't none of my business. That ain't my life. Like,
I feel like ASAP said some shit like that too.
He did. But ASAP, you know, I love ASAP. But Young Thug, I was just like, oh no, I'll never listen to this man again. I will never. And then to see him start, you know, curating the culture, I'm like, okay, I feel you have to give him a benefit of a doubt. Like, how young are these people coming into this industry with millions of dollars in their face? Of course, with no PR, with no, you know, you throw, like, they don't know what to say, you know? And it's like, they getting paid. Why are you putting this pressure on them? Should they be concerned with it? Absolutely. I think now you hear some of the concern and some of the music that they're saying, but when they were 20 and this is their first year of getting a deal and seeing this money, they're not concerned with all of that other stuff, you know? So to see him kind of move from that to, you know, hear that he, I think it was Lil Baby, he gave like Lil Baby $1 million.
To get out the game.
I'm like, I respect that. Like, that's then, you can say, oh, in theory, this is how I feel about Michael Brown and all of this. But then you can say, I'm getting these men off the streets for real, you know, and making them actually have ownership and building wealth for their families. Like, yeah, you know, the Michael Brown thing was it. Initially, to me, it was unforgivable. But I think we're in this cancel culture where we want to cancel everything that we don't approve of people. And these people didn't choose to be our role models. They were artists. If it was 30, 40 years ago, we wouldn't know a lot of the moves and the shit that they were saying. We just would know the music. And so I think we have to take that with a grain of salt, you know, in how we evaluate and assess these artists in our culture now.
Back in the day, you wouldn't even know they did some foul shit until you watched the movie. You wouldn't have known Frankie Lyman had his girl's dog hanging out the window until you watched the movie.
Exactly.
Why Do Fools Fall in Love,
exactly,
by the way.
Exactly, which is still an amazing
classic
movie.
Lorenz
Absolutely.
Tate. Lorenz Tate
Vivica
is a great
Fox.
Hey, Lorenz Tate is a great actor.
Yeah.
Shout out to him on Power, though.
Shout out to...
You watch Power?
I do watch Power.
Who shot Ghost? Who shot Ghost?
I don't know who shot Ghost, but somebody needed to shoot his ass. Ghost was...
Ghost is foul, man, but, you know... I don't like what Ghost does, but for some reason, like, I want him to win. But he's not going to, though. He's not going to.
I want him to win as long as he, you know, he ain't loyal. I don't want him to win. The way he did Tasha, the way he did Tommy, Tommy is the realest on there.
Yeah, he is.
Tommy the realest.
In the beginning, I really wanted him to win. Like, I wanted him to be on that straight, narrow path, do all the things that he says he wants to do, but he's just really all about himself.
Yeah.
He's not going to win, though. Like, the villain has to go down.
What do you mean? I disagree. Because at the end, we got to think about whose show it is.
It's his show.
Whose show is
but
it? No, it's,
I know
50,
coming, I...
it's 50 Cent's show. And 50 Cent is the villain that keeps on winning. Like, so why couldn't he win?
They're coming out with another show after that Power Book. I don't think Ghost is going to end up being alive or not out of jail when the show ends. I'd be surprised if the show ends and he's still alive. I don't think he's dead. Like, when it comes back tomorrow, because it's Saturday, today's the 4th, comes back on the 5th. When it comes back tomorrow, I don't think he's going to be dead. Like, he's still going to be alive. It's just going to be a big thing about, like, who shot him and
yeah, he's going to be trying. That's going to be the new transition of him trying to figure out who shot him.
I think Tate did it.
You think so?
It was too precise. But who knows, man? I mean, it could be any of them. He did a lot of people wrong.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
I hope it was Tasha. Just because I wouldn't.
It's just
Tasha's
a lot
smart,
of, so
and
much...
I just wouldn't see it. You wouldn't see it coming. So I
they
think
all
she...
all have motive, though. They
exactly.
All have motive.
They do, but I think you would think Tasha had the least motive. But Tasha is usually, she's was the brains behind them for a long time. So if you see all this chaos and you don't know the motive, you shoot that nigga. And then you let everybody else deal with it. I don't know. I had motive like everybody else, but I'm his wife. Would you really, really, really think it was me before everybody else? Nah.
We'll see, man. We'll see what happens. After y'all listen to this episode, y'all will know who shot Ghost. Or if y'all don't watch the show, y'all should check it out.
Absolutely. Check it out. Support the culture. And I mean, I don't know. I take that back. 50, let me take that back, because I did just get a text from his team right now where I said he was the villain. let me PR my own PR. But no, I think I'm proud of 50. Again, I'm proud of these, like, culture creators. Like, that's what they're calling them now.
My man sold his vitamin water stock. And got paid, bro.
Paid. And I think...
He didn't even have to rap after that.
He didn't, but... And even... He didn't even tell that story. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that shit broke out, and we didn't even know 50 Cent owned part of Vitamin Water.
He bought it before it was even hot.
Exactly. And that's, like, that was a move. That was when he was one of the first
Because he bought it before
ones.
Coca-Cola bought it.
He did, because that's when he made the money in the sale, the acquisition to Coca-Cola. But even that, it was like... 50 to come from many men, which is still
Get Rich or Die Trying. Like, when we first started the OE, we have a group chat. I challenged everybody, because I got this from Jemele Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, post like the 10 most impactful albums like of your life. Could just be whatever music you want. I definitely put that one in there. I told a story on a previous podcast. I won't say it again, but 50 for sure, the way he came in the game. Get Rich or Die Trying was everything to me.
Absolutely. And I just, I don't know, like I said, one song of the year definitely was Many Men.
Yeah. Like, and the video was nice too.
Nah, I don't. It's just, to me, it sounds like a Negro spiritual. Like, it's just the way he come on there, you hear the pain. Like, it's just, Many Men is just an amazing song. Like, yeah. I think Get Rich or Die Trying is definitely a breakout album for me. Just an impactful album. The Carter 1 and the Carter 2 were break, like.
Yeah, Carter 2 is everything.
And then I think for me also, Dedication 2. Dedication 2 was just.
One of the best mixtapes ever. I did a top five mixtapes of the decade.
Who'd you have on there? Did you have Fab, Funeral Fab, There's No Competition, 1 or 2 or 3?
Honestly, I didn't put any of those. I put Soul Tape, though.
Okay.
Soul Tape 2.
I can see with the Soul Tape.
So my five, matter of fact, I still got it on.
That had St. Elmo's Fire on there, too, right?
Nah, it didn't.
The Soul Tape did? Yes.
So the five, real quick, I'll run through it. Just real quick. If anybody hadn't heard it, they haven't watched the other show. But my five was True Religion from 2 Chainz.
Okay.
4 was Friday Night Lights from Cole.
Uh-huh.
3 was Cushion Orange Juice from Wiz.
Mm-hmm.
2 was More About Nothing. And 1 was Soul Tape 2.
I would say Cushion OJ for sure. So Far Gone.
So Far Gone was 2009, so that doesn't count for the decade. I looked that up. I looked it up before I made the list. I was really strategic when I did this. I thought about that.
Okay, so then that would actually take out a lot of them because Dedication 2 was like 05.
No,
right?
Yeah, I said decade though, not like ever. This is just the decade. That's hard. I had that's a little bit more thinking.
Yeah, then I would have to say for sure There's No Competitions.
Yeah, I love those too.
So,
but those might have even been like, there had to be at least one of them that came out in
before.
That
you're right. You're
at
right.
At least one.
I think maybe Competition 2 may have been like 2010.
Yeah, one came out. That. One came out like 07 because I remember I was in college.
Yeah, for sure. Damn. What was the French Montana's? Was it Coke Boys? What was it?
Coke. Yeah, he had so many Coke Boys.
It was one of Coke Boys for sure. That was. Hell, but when I think about it, almost all of my favorite mixtapes were probably by DJ Drama.
He had a lot of good ones. A lot of good ones.
You're right. Now you got me thinking. I'm going to have to go back to
You're going to have to let me know. But, you know, you work with a lot of artists, and it sounds like you got a lot of good stuff going on. But to get off of the artist subject, just recently, you're getting set up for an exhibit that you have coming in February. Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
How I Forget About Where Is Here, My Baby. So, So, again, I don't know how. I don't call myself an artist. People be trying to call me an artist. I'm not an artist. That's not my thing. But I do appreciate art. And I think that it's not just music that changes the culture. Art is so, so important to us. And art, it just means a lot to me. So for a while, I had been curating some exhibits in East Austin. And I was actually curating at a gallery for a while as a job. And then I left the job and people would still come to me and talk to me about my gallery exhibits and how they were just so much fun and just different. And so I was approached by another gallery curator that I worked with because I managed the 12th and Chacon mural. That was my project along with Chris Rogers. Shout out to the muralist. He's amazing. We worked on that project for a little bit over a year. And that's when I met the other gallery curator. It's right, you know, you've been there. It's right around the corner. And so he approached me about being a white man in the Black community. Excuse me. And with that, he basically... East Austin is facing a lot of gentrification, and that is one of the major topics in Austin for sure. And he felt that mural was basically, you know, an ode to the community. And he felt that as a white man, he didn't know how to connect with the community. And so he came to me and I said, you just got to know people. I said, you got to go get to know these people. That seems so hard for some people sometimes. And so, you know, I'm like, you coming into this Black community? Know the Black community. And this white man, shout out to Philip, so damn cool. Philip was like, okay. And he really took that on. He stopped going you know, streets or blocks away to get his hair cut at the white, like, barbershop. He goes right across the street to the black barbershop.
Nice.
He started eating, you know, at all the little black eateries around his gallery, to where he stops in, they stop in, they speak to him. You know, he really started learning these people, learning their family, speaking to them, and going out of his way to, you know, just show and pay homage to the community that was, you know, that he was in. And the black community embraced him. He's probably the only white tenant in East Austin that I know everybody just fuck with. Like, he cool, you know?
That's hard.
And he's an older white man, but he's like just a creative genius. And people don't know Philip because he's very, very quiet as far as what he does. He doesn't like the attention. But Philip, he does graphic design, which is how he opens his gallery. His gallery is opened with his own money. It's maintained with his own money. But he does graphic design. He's done graphic design for downtown buildings like signage and stuff. But he's also done animation. He's worked with, to my knowledge, I think, the Gorillas. He's definitely done some animation for Beyonce. He's like done work, and he doesn't really talk about it. And I'm just like, why not? You know,
humble.
But very humble, very, very humble. But Philip approached me and was just like, let's do, an exhibit to pay homage to the community. And we came up with Where Is Here? And Where Is Here is basically an exhibit of 100 photos of 100 people age 0 to 100 who live, work, or frequent East Austin. So the whole goal is just to talk about how the past, present, and future is really building the culture in East Austin, and how we will continue to build it, even facing, you know, things like gentrification. And so we have been working on this for a year and a half, capturing pictures of babies, of elderly people, everybody. We're going to events, you know, showing up, partnering with the events to get photos of them. We had the studio open for days and weeks to just allow people to come in and get their photos taken and just really tell the story. And so it evolved from being something small that we were just talking about to now being featured in a Chronicle and different just publications, and people are really just talking about it. And so it's amazing to just see, you know, what it's becoming. And so in February, we've grown from one exhibit to two exhibits. So I will be curating
it
in two different spots during February, and some will be up during South By as well.
And what's the date for that again?
We're still figuring that out because I have to get over like 150 photos printed. And so it will be sometime during mid-February, but you'll probably see it up on Facebook, on Instagram. If you're following
awesome.
Me on anything, I'm talking about it a lot. Where Is Here?
And we'll definitely repost it on the OE Instagram.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Thank you.
So before we go today,
mm-hmm.
I want to ask you one more question.
Yes.
Top five rappers or your personal five.
I just had this conversation with someone yesterday. Can I do two categories? Because I think you have to do the top five rappers of all time, and then you have to do the top five current ones.
If you know it off the top of your head.
Yes, I got it, because I just had this conversation. My top five of all time would be Andre 3000.
And this is 5-1 or 1-5? Or is this?
No order.
Okay.
Andre 3000, Jay-Z, Wayne, it's so many. Hold on, let me look it up, because I literally typed it out, because I got to get this. I'm so mad about this, because we were going back and forth, because I'm like, honestly, I'll be wanting to put Ice Cube in there, and people be sleeping on Ice Cube, and I feel like Ice Cube is one of our best rappers.
No Vaseline.
Exactly, but they don't be knowing that. They don't know no Vaseline. They don't know America's Most Wanted. They don't know that.
Chickadee, check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Shout out to my daddy. I was listening to all that shit way too young. That and all of Too Short. Like, Too Short is underrated. Man,
my cousin put me on Too Short when I was a kid.
Man.
I shouldn't have been listening to it.
At all. I remember listening to it in the car with my dad before my mom would get in and he would change it. Okay, so.
Andre 3000.
Andre 3000. Jay-Z, Pac, Wayne, and Kendrick Lamar.
That's all time? Or what list is that?
Yeah, I think that's all time.
Okay.
I think that's all time. I love Biggie, but I'm not the Biggie fan that I think other people
Man,
are.
Man, I'm a hardcore Biggie fan. Definitely over Pac. I guess it's just the East Coast in me.
Yeah.
And I would
that.
Definitely, I would love to continue and keep talking about this. We're going to have to do a whole nother episode. I'm going to have to bring you back like here.
I got we'll to do my five of all time. Currently. That would be K-Dot, Cole, I think, Lil Uzi, 21 Savage, and Gucci Mane. Currently. These are my current.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can fuck with that.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. But no, the dialogue that we've had today has been great.
Thank you.
I definitely want to have you come back, especially with X here. Shout out to X, not feeling well. Didn't even mention that he wasn't here today. Y'all probably noticed because you didn't hear X-rated. You know what I mean? But definitely want you to come back maybe before you do your show again. We can talk about the show a little bit more and
absolutely
have more music talk because I know X would like a lot of the stuff that we were saying today and everything.
I know. Remember when we were just off the show, we were talking about just music theory and stuff, and that was just a really good conversation.
I went to go take some pictures for her exhibit, and I legit stayed there, and we talked for like a good 45 minutes to an hour, me, her, and the photographer.
Yeah.
Just talking about like different ages of music and what's considered people say, oh, this isn't real music anymore. And I don't want to get off tangent because I got another show to do. But hey, I appreciate you really coming in today.
Of course.
Thank you so much,
Thank
Key.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. One time for the one time.
One time.